The Air Force will award a contract for a long-range strike bomber this year. That contract could completely change the landscape of the aerospace industry, according to Richard Abulafia. He's vice president of analysis at the Thiel Group Corporation, and he says if there's only one thing to pay attention to in the aerospace industry this year, this is it. That's Fortune Magazine, in which you're quoted along those lines. Richard, thanks for being on the program today. Why is the long-range strike bomber potentially not just shocking for the three companies involved, but potentially for the landscape of the defense industrial base? Thanks for coming on today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. You know, I mean, when you look at the number of airframes, important new combat aircraft airframes, they seem to happen at about a once-a-decade clip these days. So basically, LRSB is about it. And of course, what's notable is that you've got Lockheed Martin doing Joint Strike Fighter, and you've got two other military airframers who are quite eager to stay in that business. In the case of Boeing, stay in that business. In the case of Northrop Grumman, get back into that business after just a few years' absence. But there's only one contract, and this is it. And there's quite a lot riding on this as a result.
The Fortune piece points out some facts about what each of these companies is working on that I didn't know, and I find this piece says Northrop's last prime aircraft contract was for the B-2 Spirit, which entered service more than a decade ago, only 21 of them built. Boeing's only existing combat jet assembly line will cease production in 2018 unless it finds a new buyer for its F-18 or F-15 fighter jets. So am I characterizing it correctly for either one of those companies when I say that the long-range strike bombers make or break?
It very much is make or break, you know, and I think DOD is mindful of this, which is why you've seen talk emerge of FX at the airport, at the Air Force, and FAXX in the Navy, which are the sixth generation twin jet heavyweight fighters that'll be emerging. But the important thing to remember about these is that they're really not going to come online till like 2030 at the very earliest. You might see some R&D funding in the early 2020s, but basically, if you want to be around to compete for those contracts, you've got to win LRSB.
So some scenarios here that I'll throw out, and I'm interested to hear what you think could happen. And this Fortune piece says the initiative and the opportunity really belong to Boeing right now. What happens, in your view, if Boeing and Lockheed team up and win this deal?
Well, then I think it's a fairly straightforward story. Boeing uses this program to basically replace its fighter aircraft as they get phased out at the end of the decade, the last F-15 and the last Super Hornet and Growler. And that would mean situation as normal, in which case Northrop Grumman would stay pretty much what it is, which is a major producer of defense electronics and, of course, subsystems and assemblies for other aircraft and radar planes, battle management, UAVs, things like that. In other words, I think there'd be less potential for radical change under that scenario.
If it goes the other way and Northrop gets it, what do you think would develop then?
Well, that's the real game changer, in which case Boeing would have a very simple choice. It could either exit the combat aircraft business, and you know, it's not just Boeing. It's also legacy McDonnell Douglas, legacy Rockwell, all of the legacy companies that were rolled into it in the 90s. Or they can choose to make a bid for Northrop's aviation unit, the aerospace unit, the part that would be building this, along with parts of the Joint Strike Fighter and other programs. That would be a fairly simple choice. I can't think of a third option for them.
Now, this whole idea is, from the way it appears, already making the Defense Department a little queasy. They've already talked about the overall concept of shaping the defense industrial base as the number of big players gets smaller. But I wonder, in your view, what they could really do about it other than say they don't like it.
You know, I mean, I think that's exactly the point. You know, you look back at the 90s, especially the early 90s, the post-Cold War years, there's this kind of myth of the Last Supper, and I call it a myth. I have no doubt that there was indeed a very nice dinner in which the defense contractors were told, hey, there's not enough business for you all. But if you look at what really precipitated consolidation in the defense contracting business, it was key defense contracts, the advanced tactical fighter, the advanced tactical aircraft, and, of course, JASSM, Joint Strike Fighter, and everything else. This restructuring took place after those contracts were awarded, usually to other people. In other words, it's not a question of simply sitting down and saying, you can do that, you mustn't do that, et cetera, et cetera. It's a question of the money. And with out any more to play with in the LRSB contract, it's not really clear how DOD can shape this landscape.
What does it mean then for the layer underneath the big three? I mean, there are tons of subs that would be affected here, and there are other large players, maybe not even in the aerospace industry, that would say, well, DOD warned us, but if that deal went down, whatever shape that would take, and they didn't really do anything about it, then we should go do our deal.
There's some truth to that. What's different in the subcontractor field is that they're far better hedged against risk. You know, you've just got much broader portfolios of programs that they're on. And if you're a major subcontractor, like, say, United Technologies or Safran or Honeywell, General Electric, you're going to have very heavy exposure to the commercial aerospace market, which is much bigger. So the pressure to do something is that much less. What we're talking about when we look at DOD industry restructuring and its role in industry restructuring is really combat aircraft, because that's where the big change is. The market pressure is really showing itself.
The consolidation of the defense industrial base, as I said, is something, I mean, we've been hearing about it, especially over the last 3 years or so, I suppose. Is this something that companies are just now starting to think about, or was there a period even in the late 2000s when budgets were particularly robust where companies started to think, this ride can't last forever, and we need to think about what we look like 10 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. You know, you had this amazing decade, the procurement budget, for example. You know, go back to FY 2001, it's about $50 billion. You know, we peaked in the 130s, aside from the one FY 08 peak, which was sort of a one-off to the 150s, I believe. Since then, we've come back down. We're at about 100 now. In real terms, we're scheduled to erode a little bit. It's a very different landscape. And I think now the sort of contingency plans that people had for industry restructuring are kind of being dusted off. Yesterday, of course, you had the announcement from United Technologies. They were looking at strategic options for its Sikorsky military rotorcraft unit. I think that's very telling. They probably had these plans in one form or another on the shelf and ready to go for some years now, but it's only recently that the market pressures have been really clear about what they should do.
Mm-hmm. As this landscape breaks out, are there markers that we should look for that would indicate which direction it's going to go, other than just the straight-up awarding of the long-range strike bomber contract?
Does come down to LRSB. That's what makes it kind of exciting. It's pretty clear, you know, you read the tea leaves and you read it was a very good report by Congressional Research Service that says, hey, there's a lot of this program that was probably in the black for some time now, just hasn't been made aware, which is why all of a sudden it's an action item. You know, the decision will be made this summer and production will begin a little bit quicker than you might expect for a program at this stage of its selection, not in the next couple of years, but not too much beyond that. In other words, this is it's a real game changer.
Is there any significance or import to the fact that the person who is now running the Department of Defense is a former ATL? Does that mean anything, or is it just a thing?
That remains to be seen. That's going to be really interesting because, of course, he is on record as saying that maybe it's time to not have any more mergers at the very top tier. But, of course, that's exactly the kind of pronouncement that we've seen in the past, and it's not really clear that they've got the cash to mandate that decision stick, that absolutely nobody can swap assets or merge or simply divest itself of everything that matters. In other words, there might be more that's going on in the market and with investor expectations than is dreamt of in the world of ATL.
One of the things then, I guess my takeaway from our conversation at this point, Richard, is the one arrow that they really have in their quiver is the ability to come up with other programs and spread them around sufficiently that it's not necessary or worth it for these companies to merge or consolidate.
Yeah, that's precisely right. You know, and of course, there are a couple of other much smaller arrows. In addition to FX and FAXX, there's the TX trainer competition to replace the Air Force's T-38 supersonic trainer fleet. And then, of course, there are all sorts of rumors of black programs that are out there that might give people an incentive to stay in that business. But you look at the sheer scope of what's going on with the bomber and, of course, with the Joint Strike Fighter, and everything else looks pretty small by comparison.